Our material possessions have profound effects on our lives. And those effects can be as big and complex as entire economies, or as small as owning a washing machine. Even that can be complicated.
My adult life, I decide, can be divided into two distinct parts: the time before I owned a washing machine and the time after. I consider the possibility that the washing machine, more than the house, has changed my life. I call my sister and tell her that what I've really done is buy a $400,000 container for a washing machine. As I say this, I'm aware that the cost of our house was closer to $500,000. But I don't say that out loud. It makes me too uncomfortable.
That's Eula Biss reading from her book, Having and Being Had. It's a collection of essays about her experience buying a house and about all the philosophical and emotional baggage that came with it. Steve Paulson wanted to unpack it with her.
It's a stew of emotions. Guilt over having things that I know other people don't and can't have. Guilt over what the production of those things or the acquisition of those things cost other people's lives. But I think I also just have a deep discomfort with material things, even though there is, you know, some attraction for me to things, to nice things or beautiful things, aesthetics of things.
Well, I had to laugh when you were writing about paging through a Restoration Hardware catalog, which is kind of like house porn for upper middle class people. I mean, the stuff they sell is pretty expensive. But I have to say, I find it fun flipping through the catalog and kind of gross at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Actually, the catalog itself is gross. I'm not even sure I opened the one that I wrote about because it was so huge. It was so massive that its bulk just offended me.
So what catalogs do you look through then?
All these uninvited catalogs come along and I'll flip through IKEA and I'll flip through Crate and Barrel and Room and Board. And it feels like, I don't know, a kind of voyeurism. It's not unenjoyable.
What I find so interesting about this, I mean, I have that feeling too, is there's both pleasure and discomfort kind of simultaneously.
Yes. Yeah. Pleasure and discomfort and disgust. You know, those are some of the same emotions that came up for me when I bought a house. Occupying this house has made my life easier and more comfortable in a number of ways, some of them small, some of them large, from minor things like the fact that I don't have to carry my bicycle up a bunch of stairs to an apartment anymore, to more major things like my son walks to our local elementary school. But even though because I was enjoying all the comforts of this house soon after we bought it, I was also somewhat disgusted by what felt to me like the excesses of middle-class American life.
What do you mean by that? What kinds of excesses?
The amount of space I have in this house, it's a two-bedroom house. Really, it's a lot of space for three people. And this was made obvious to me when very early in owning the home, before we'd even put any furniture in our front room, in our living room, a woman knocked on the door, a Mexican woman who had four children with her. And she said, we want to know if we can rent your front room. And I said, oh, I'm sorry, we live here. But she was confused because there's absolutely nothing in that room. And she said, but it's empty. That was a moment where I was really forced to reevaluate the amount of space I was occupying and how excessive it seemed from the point of view of a woman who thought just one room in our house would be enough space for her family of five.
Yeah. Well, it seems like we're not just talking about material possessions or even affluence. We're also talking about white privilege. And it's worth pointing out, you live in a racially mixed neighborhood in Chicago, which is gentrifying. New people are moving in who are white, like you, while the older residents are black.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What kind of issues does that raise for you?
Lots of issues and thoughts and feelings about white privilege and my participation in that system. White privilege going back hundreds of years is just intrinsically tied to property rights. And there's a long network of laws and policies, some of them official, some of them unofficial, that have benefited white people like myself and allowed us to build wealth and own property at the expense of other people's, not just wealth, but other people's freedom and livelihoods. And knowing that history is part of what makes me feel very conflicted about owning property. And at the same time, do I want the security that comes with, you know, the emotional, psychological security that comes with owning a house, and also the financial security of this investment that will then be passed on to my child? Yes, I want that. And that's at war with my discomfort.
So learning about that, did that make you feel worse about owning your own house?
Yeah, in some ways. I mean, I think it just helped me understand what I'd really invested in, which is a kind of linchpin of capitalism.
So how do you classify your own social or economic status? Are you middle class? Are you upper middle class?
You know, when I started working on this book, this project, I thought of myself as middle class. That term itself is so wide and poorly understood and poorly defined in this country that it's close to meaningless to think of yourself as middle class or call yourself middle class. When I started looking at numbers and seeing how unusual it is for someone to have some of the, not the stuff that I have, but the kind of security that I have. And by that, I mean health insurance, a salary, an account that I'm keeping for my child to go to college, and a retirement account. So that collection of safety nets is what I believe makes me rich.
Oh, so you consider yourself rich?
After doing quite a bit of anguished thought and research, I think I do. I think it's politically important for me to acknowledge my economic privilege, my wealth, which would, I'll mention, be fairly invisible to a casual observer. My life looks like a modest middle-class life, but I understand myself as rich.
You write very explicitly about how much things cost and how much money people actually make, and you reveal that your salary is $73,000, and your household income is $125,000, and this is not the kind of thing that people talk about in public. I mean, unless they want to talk about how little they make or how underpaid they are, how exploited they are, you put that out there.
It was extremely uncomfortable to do that. I made the decision very early on in this book that when I talked about money, I was going to name explicit sums. That was a rule I made for myself. But I found it excruciating, harder than almost anything I've written about. And I've written about all kinds of subjects that people would consider either private or uncomfortable. I've written about race, my own racial privilege. I've written a fairly graphic description of my own experience giving birth to my child. So it was a bit of a surprise to me that actually just naming my salary and my household income felt so exposing and uncomfortable. And I really squirmed within that decision and that rule that I made for myself.
Why does it make you so uncomfortable?
That's a great question. And I think I had to write the whole book to answer that. It made me uncomfortable to be located class-wise precisely. And it made me uncomfortable because I know from looking at the numbers that I make considerably more and I have considerably more than most people in this country. Having that exposed felt incriminating. But you know what was hardest about it for me was not just feeling exposed, it was being exposed in front of myself. You know, I think I did have this fantasy of myself as an artist who lived outside the system and was anti-capitalist, but I definitely don't. And I'm deeply invested in the financial sense.
There's another conclusion you might come to, that maybe capitalism has more value than you realize. It gives you some of these things that you had actually wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Retirement, possibility to save for your son's education, to have a house that appreciates so you're not just sort of throwing away your money in rent. Maybe it's not so bad.
Well, it's not bad for me, but I get those things because other people don't have them. And I think we could imagine an economic system in which everyone would have their retirement provided for, and private retirement accounts would not be something that people needed or did. We could imagine a system in which education was provided for everyone. And I am very aware of the fact that I'm on the winning end of capitalism. But do I think that my community, my immediate neighborhood, the society at large has benefited from that system? No. And actually, I think that's where the loss comes from in my life. I can see all over, all around me, ways in which this system has damaged people that I care about and that I'm close to, and damaged my ability to have close communal relationships with the people around me.
That was Steve Paulson talking with Eula Biss. Her new book is called Having and Being Had.